The other thing that about the sleep, and I always like it when I can bring in an article from something like the Journal of American Medical Association, because they're very mainstream conservative medicine, but them, like all the other journals, are starting to look more and more into the healthy biology, physiology literature and putting papers in their journals like that. So December 24th, 2008, the Journal of American Medical Association has an article saying that for every hour under 8 hours of sleep we get a night, we're more likely to be calcifying our coronary arteries. Well, look at how serious of a problem it is for people having heart attacks and strokes and one thing or the other. And part of that is, you know, is atherosclerosis, is hardening of the arteries, which is calcium in the arteries. And they say if you sleep less than 8 hours a night, if you increase your sleep by 1 hour, you could decrease the likelihood of calcifying your coronaries by 33%. So with that in mind, I think people need to be very serious about sleeping. And some of the other tips is just to actually try to get bright sunlight in the middle of the day, maybe 30 minutes. And if you can, if you're in a place where you can get more skin exposure, you're probably going to get a higher level of vitamin D. And that's a whole other topic. We could talk about that all day long. But vitamin D is probably responsible for at least 1 to 2,000 genes that have to do with inflammation and immunity. So optimizing your vitamin D level is another critical part to any detoxification program.
Leonard, give everybody some simple suggestions, more suggestions on what they can do if they're in a bad habit. I know I, you know, you and I at times have both been up late at night sharing research articles back and forth and look at the clock and it's late. And it's so easy to get sucked into your computer, checking your emails. That light getting into your eyes is a really bad thing. Keeping you, and then after that, I can't go to sleep for another hour or two because I'm wired. And so I think absolutely, this is something I try to do when I can. Is after dinner, especially in the wintertime, I literally turn the lights down really low, and even sometimes put candle lights on. And I've noticed when you do that, and this is great too for children, for families who have children in the house. If you put candle light on. Don't put on the TV, and you just sit around and play a board game or something. The kids are get sleepy so early, and an hour later, the parents are sleepy, and everybody can start getting to bed. Those first few hours before midnight are the really important ones to try to capture.
Right.
But what else would you pops into your mind about? I mean, how do you feel about taking melatonin? I'm more of a GABA-5-HTP person. Because I believe that sometimes we're so much on overdrive that, you know, you have to, GABA is a calming neurotransmitter, it's just an amino acid, but neurotransmitter, brain chemical, and it's calming. 5-HTP converts into serotonin and into melatonin. I often prefer that as a first choice over actually taking melatonin. But then when I travel and I change you know, if I go from the East Coast to the West Coast or over to Japan or Australia or something, I definitely take melatonin with me for those major changes.
Well, I personally think it's better to make it, make melatonin rather than take it if you can. And that's what I was about to allude to with the bright sunlight. Not only with the bright sunlight are you more likely to make vitamin D, but it actually resets your pineal gland to, it's almost like loading it because it's making no melatonin in bright sunlight, and everything's a question of balance. So the bright sunlight shuts that down so completely that then after sunset, if you are doing candlelight or soft light, it will help, it'll actually help the production of melatonin being in the bright sun during the middle of the day. So I thought that was an interesting fact. The people in that Lights Out book also mentioned that wearing rose-colored glasses or I think even sunglasses, if you're on a computer at night or watching TV, might be a good idea because our retina of our eyes are from our genetic code, which are tens of thousands of years old, and we've had TVs and computers for maybe 50 years. So you stop and think about it. Just the light that we're feeding our eyes has a lot to do with our inability to sleep. So Yeah, I definitely agree with the candles or soft lights in the evening as one way to do it. But even if you do all that, some people still have trouble sleeping. And you're right, some combination of either 5-HTP, GABA, or melatonin does work. The bottom line is people need to sleep. Even if you have to take a prescription like Ambien or Restoril, I don't recommend that. But if you have to, it's that important to get back to sleep. But so much of sleeping is habit. And the habit is you've got to plan at least an hour before you go to bed to wind down. If you're going to read something, actually to just sit and meditate would be the best thing to do. Just watch your breath go in and out and be very still. Or if you read, do it by soft light until you fall asleep. But try to go to bed pretty much the same time every night. Don't watch TV in the room you go to sleep in. There's a lot of just simple practical facts that can help sleep. And then, of course, some people get to sleep but don't stay asleep, and a lot of this is because of the inflammation in the body creating pain or tightness. And so I tell people, if they wake up, if you need to, take another 5-HTP, another GABA, or another melatonin, but get to sleep. And then just be aware of the fact, if you're not able to sleep throughout the night, you probably do have elevated cortisol and or elevated inflammation. And welcome to the human race, because I think most of us do. I know I do at times, sometimes more than others. So, but the key is to make sure you sleep. I think that's really critical. And tryptophan can be useful, but there's some pretty significant data showing that if you take tryptophan and you've got enough inflammation going on in your body, the tryptophan will actually be diverted to what's called the kynurenine pathway, which is just another metabolic pathway, and will end up making a quinolate. And quinolate actually opens these NMDA receptors in the brain that are so sensitive to glutamate, and it will cause excitation of the brain. So you can actually have it backfire taking just tryptophan. The nice thing about the 5-hydroxytryptophan, it's past that blockage area, so I think that's a fairly reasonable sleep alternative. Melatonin, though, is hard to beat because it's the most powerful antioxidant made by our body, and we're learning more about it all the time. I mean, I've recently found that, believe it or not, the intestinal tract makes 500 times more melatonin than your brain does, and it has a lot to do with keeping the esophagus, the stomach, and the duodenum uninflamed. So it's going to be considered even more of a treatment for everything from GERD to gastritis and other problems. But so I think you're right, Donna. Sleep is critical, and it needs to be where you just get in a pattern of doing it the right way. And if you have to, particularly if you're over 60, just plan to take something to sleep. I would say a significant percentage of the population does.
But, you know, something in the second class that we did, I mentioned about the times of the year when the body naturally goes into cleansing, detoxification mode, and that's really the spring and the summer. The fall is more of a storing, gathering, and then the winter is a quiet, restful gathering. In the winter, we're trying to be very quiet and still so we can gather energy so that we can be active in the spring and the summer. And we are creatures of nature, and one of the things you said that I love and hope that people really got is that getting out in the morning, in the sunlight, walking, moving, that's what we always did. As you know, people have done that for thousands of years. They had to get up and milk the cows and whatever, go to work and get outside and be closer to nature. And then we live so isolated from that today that this is one of the reasons. I mean, that's the first step I would try, is to get up, get out in the sunlight early in the morning when the sun is not so bright, and move your body and walk, and then you'll find yourself naturally being more tired and definitely sleeping better
right at
night too. And then going to these other things. But I see children being put on melatonin, and there's just something inside of me that cringes when if you have to do that for a short period of time. But I just have concerns about that. When these same children might be just fine getting with some sunlight on their skin.
Well, not that, and a lot more exercise. And I think that's we were meant to exercise, and it amazes me that people can sleep without exercising. I know I don't sleep very well unless I exercise, because I tend to have more energy than I guess I need for the most part. But and I certainly see
it with
children.
Children.
Pardon me?
You're blood type A, and
right.
But again, I am too, by the way. And so many, 8 out of 10 of the autistic children that we work with are blood type A, and I think that from the research done in Japan on blood type and personality, because that's the predominant, blood type A is the predominant blood type in Japan, and so they know a lot about the A's, and A's tend to be, have trouble turning their minds off at night and resting and getting into that deep sleep. So, you know, I think you actually do have to put value sleep and say, this is such an important thing. I'm going to start preparing for it. I'm not going to be taking phone calls after a certain time, and I'm going to move into or take a hot bath. That's one thing the Japanese have always done, is had these wonderful hot baths that make you very sleepy and put you in a very, very deep sleep. But, you know, I know that that's our biggest problem today, is cutting down on the stress. We can't. This whole workshop is on detoxification, and the toxins that we're being bombarded with really can't come out unless we can't protect ourselves from them unless we do these sort of simple, basic things that are cheap. They cost nothing to do, basically. It's just lifestyle changes.
Right. Well, I think also in terms of, I meant to mention it earlier, but if you're taking a sauna or a steam bath, which I'm not as fond of, but I guess they're okay, or even a hot shower, to actually, there's some significant data that suggests that you alternate the hot shower with getting into cooler water. It doesn't have to be freezing cold, but by alternating from hot, cold, two or three cycles during a session, you actually are causing your autonomic nervous system to become more flexible. It goes from more sympathetic when you're cold, more parasympathetic when you're warmer. But there's something about doing that that rebalances the autonomic nervous system. And I really think that a lot of toxicity issues are due to our needle being stuck in the sympathetic zone. It goes from total overdrive to minimal or moderate overdrive, but it never goes back into the state of real stillness and rest. And, then, of course, that's one of the things exercise does. Exercise takes you into profound sympathetic overdrive, but then in the rest cycle, you really do rest because, well, one reason is exercise releases something called interleukin-6 that the muscles cause the body to release more interleukin-6, which is sort of a paradox because it's an inflammatory cytokine, but it actually shuts down the ones that are more inflammatory for 10 or 12 hours. So if you don't over-exercise, the right amount of exercise is possibly one of the best anti-inflammatory autonomic balancing things we can do. But that's why it's good to do a variety of exercise and not just be stuck with just running or something like that.
And some people listening to this call actually will have trouble or thinking, but I don't have any energy. I don't feel like exercising. And I think that's where working on the thyroid, working on the adrenals to get your energy up is so important. And so many people today do have underactive hypothyroids, an autoimmune thyroid condition that has to be addressed as well.
So, Leonard, we've gotten a lot of questions about water. Can you talk to us about how important hydration is when it comes to detoxification?
Well, it's not just important with detoxification. It's important for survival. I don't think humans can go past about 7 days without totally dying without water. So, but I do think people stay chronically dehydrated because, particularly as we get older, our thirst receptors lose their sensitivity, and people think they're not thirsty, and yet if you look at their total body water, they are dehydrated. So I've heard many numbers. I think as a general guideline of one number, half of your body weight in ounces of water is a pretty good one. That translates into somewhere between 2 and 4 quarts of water a day for most human beings. Smaller people and older people, maybe 2 quarts is enough. But everybody's an experiment of one, and they need to work with it. If you're in a humid climate where you don't lose as much through your skin, maybe that's different than if you live in like Arizona or somewhere where you're really in a dry climate. You may need to even drink more water. So what I tell people is, in terms of the quantity, you drink enough to make sure that you have several good episodes of passing urine a day, and it ought to be fairly dilute. I mean, if you're drinking enough water that you're going every hour and it's perfectly clear, you're probably over drinking water. On the other hand, if you only go once or twice a day and it's very dark, you're clearly not drinking enough water. So that's just a guideline. Obviously, exercising, you need to drink water. If you drink any caffeine, whether it's from tea or coffee, or drink alcohol, both of those shut off arginine vasopressin, which is a hormone that actually causes your body to lose water. So any caffeine, any alcohol, let that be a real reminder. I need to drink probably another pint or even a quart of water to make up for the free water I've lost because of drinking those things. I think it needs to be very well filtered, certainly for chlorine, fluorine, and you could make a whole discussion on water filtration, but that's not the purpose today here. But filtered water is good. It's way better than even bottled water, or the whole problem with the bisphenol A and different other things, I'm sure, are in plastic bottles. So, but that being said, it's better to drink water out of a plastic bottle than it is to drink a Coke out of a glass bottle or something. So, water is critical. I do think it's important to add, you can either alkalinize water from an alkaline water machine, but I think that's good. But I think equally good in some ways is to just get really in the habit of using organic lemons. Chopping up organic lemons and putting them in water, then you can sweeten it with stevia or Lakanto or something that will make like a lemonade, and just sip it throughout the day. It turns out that potassium citrate that's in lemon is a very good alkalinizer for the body, and it adds a lot of potassium to the body. And I think the problem with being dehydrated and being on an animal-based diet, too much protein is what? It's amino acid. And and I'm not saying you shouldn't have some, but too much. You know, I'm talking about people that really eat a lot of meat and don't drink much water are really dehydrated and acidic as well. And we now know that if you stay too acidic in the blood and in the urine, you literally lose magnesium, potassium, and calcium. Your principal minerals and quite possibly other minerals are lost in the urine, so you become minerally depleted. So I do think that the idea of replacing it with some sort of alkalinization, of course, eating a vegetable diet, a very high plant-based diet is very high in water, so you may not need to drink quite as much water with that. But I think we should detox and be thinking detoxification every day. But if you're actually doing a special week or two where you are doing a lot more of the detoxification protocols, even more water would be suggested.
I always encourage people to have 2 big glasses of water in the morning when they wake up before they do anything else. You can take supplements at the same time, but we wake up dehydrated and we wake up acidic. And so that tells you right there what the body needs. The things that go into the body in the morning should be alkalizing in the body, so that means minerals. And then if we're dehydrated, obviously, we need to be taking things into the body that are
right, that
have fluids in them, like water and green drinks and green smoothie, and even use the juicier acid fruits like blueberries and grapefruit and strawberries, pomegranate juice oftentimes I'll have people take a very sour juice like pomegranate juice or cranberry juice and put it, a little bit of that in a juice glass with some, one of the probiotic liquids, and then that's a great juice in the morning. But all the things we recommend in the first part of the day have a lot of water in them because that's just what the body needs. It needs alkalizing and hydrating when we first wake up.
Thank you for adding that because I think the timing is important, and that's exactly right, because your metabolic processes going on during the night will, if you're really on a high alkaline diet, you're not supposed to be alkaline all the time, and one time it's perfectly reasonable to be acidic is when you first wake up, because a lot of metabolism of protein goes on during the night and it creates a lot of acid residue that ends up in the urine. And I think one of the problems of America and the world at large is, what do we start the morning with? It's either tea or coffee, and I'm not knocking those. but you're already putting something in there that's going to cause you to lose more water. So if you do that, just remember you got to drink more water with it. That's an absolute must, or you will be chronically dehydrated.
That's important to know. And you know, Donna, you mentioned getting up in the morning and hydrating and also taking your supplements. And we have gotten questions on, you know, what kind of supplementation. And we've talked a lot about the idea that having whole food supplements is really important, which is really what a lot of the body ecology, all of the body ecology supplements are about, is whole foods. You, Donna, talked earlier about undenatured whey, and also you touched on vitamin D, Leonard. Can we talk a little bit more about the supplements you think are most important for people to take?
Sure. I personally think that a multiple vitamin with antioxidants and minerals and trace minerals and all the B vitamins is a very valuable thing to do. I don't know that you need to do it every single day. I think it depends on how many other things you're doing. And a lot of this is just about using good common sense. If you're traveling and you're not sleeping well and you're in and out of airplanes and you're around lots of people and you're not eating the way you normally do, then that's when I would be more prone to taking more supplements, just to make sure that you're not getting depleted in something. But there's all kinds of data now really supporting the value of a good antioxidant, high in B vitamins, minerals, and trace minerals as a product to take every day or most every day. Now, along with that, I definitely recommend probiotics. I don't know that I guess we'd call it a supplement, but again, I think that's not the best. I think taking probiotics and cultured foods is the best. If you're only going to take one, cultured foods is better than probiotics. But if you can't take the cultured food because you're traveling, by all means take probiotics. Actually, some extra C and E might be good, because I'm not sure anybody really gets enough vitamin C in most multiple vitamins. And you might say, well, gee, do we really need that much C? Well, vitamin C literally recharges glutathione. And glutathione is one of probably the most important detoxification molecule in the human body. And if you're exposed to toxins, like if you live in a city and you're not able to do all the things we're talking about here, you can just assume you've got a lot of toxins coming through. And so extra vitamin C is very good for helping recharge glutathione and keep many other pathways in the body working optimally. I think vitamin E is excellent, but you don't just want alpha tocopherol. It needs to be a balance. Like a gamma tocopherol is very important, and then beta and delta tocopherol as well. So there are products that have mixed tocopherols, just like we have mixed carotenoids. And the body actually prefers a symphony of small amounts of things rather than just, you know, one huge amount of anything. So a multiple vitamin, extra C and E, probiotics, and vitamin D I think is critical. If you're over 60, you may not be making enough, so you do need to take it. It's probably the closest thing to, if there is such a thing as a magic bullet in health, vitamin D is pretty close to it. We're finding free-living senior citizens, people over their 70s that are not in nursing homes, anywhere from 50 to 100% of them that have been tested are quite low in vitamin D. And vitamin D, again, controls over 1,000 genes to have to do with inflammation and immunity. And look what happens as we get older. We have more autoimmune diseases. Vitamin D apparently appears to really help that problem. It helps lower the incidence of neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and senile dementia. It helps prevent cardiovascular disease and strokes. It helps prevent almost all cancers that have been looked at. It even helps prevent and reverse things like Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis. I think we've proven in the last decade the model for all problems with humans foundationally stems from inflammation. And one of the major ways to control inflammation is making sure you have enough vitamin D. And the test you want to get if you're going to do it is called the 25-hydroxy vitamin D. If you're writing it out, it would just be 25 the numbers 2-5 and then capital O, capital H, vitamin D. And that can be done at many different labs. I personally think LabCorp is still one of the better labs for doing it. But the bottom line is it needs to be over 30 nanograms per milliliter, and the top end is up to 150 milligrams per nanograms per milliliter. So there's a huge range. But most of the top doctors at Harvard and different places now that are looking at it think the optimum range is between 60 and 70 nanograms per milliliter, which is twice what is considered low normal. And most people, even supplementing, come in at low normal. So we're talking people may have to take 5 to 10,000 units a day, but if you're doing that, you really do need to every 2 months recheck it and make sure where you're at. Now, if you're younger and you're getting in the sun, you will make 10 to 20,000 units a day. But as you get older, you don't make it as well, and then you really do need to take it. So I think it's something that's going to be more and more important. I've never seen so many papers about anything as I have about vitamin D come out in the last 3 or 4 years. So let me think if there's anything else on top of that. Those are, in terms of supplements, that's sort of the basic ones. I mean, there's all sorts of other supplements you would take, like for detoxification specifically. Like if you're doing a spring detox, you really would want to take glutathione. And you want to take glutathione precursors. We mentioned that because most of those have to do with that liver detox thing, and that would be glutamine, N-acetylcysteine, and glycine. As a matter of fact, those are the three amino acids that make glutathione, which is the potent natural chelating agent of the human body, is glutathione. Another thing to take while you're detoxing that would make sense, too, is R-lipoic acid, because R-lipoic acid also is a very powerful regenerator, recharger of glutathione. But if you take those amino acids, glutamine, N-acetylcysteine, and glycine, you will make it. So when it comes to glutathione, I say take it as a supplement, because a lot of people say, well, gee, it gets broken down. Well, it doesn't get broken down in the intestinal lining, and we already have established the intestinal lining is a major part of our detoxification program. So the glutathione that you take as a supplement is actually helping the intestinal lining. But we do need to take it, make it as well as take it, and the way you make it is with glutamine, glycine, N-acetylcysteine, and the mineral selenium. And in terms of how much you would take, you can take like a gram or two of glutamine, NAC, N-acetylcysteine, and glycine, particularly doing, you know, if you're doing like a 2 week or a 1 month major detox. I think those would be things to take to keep from getting the side effects. And I do want to caution people, because if you do a significant, if you go from not exercising, not sleeping well, too much caffeine, too much alcohol, working too hard, too much stress, and here it's March or April, and you decide, well, it's time for a big detox program, you're looking at getting very uncomfortable, because you will end up with everything from muscle aches to liver pain to possibly rashes and just systemically not feeling good, because if you release toxins too fast and the liver can't handle them, you will get side effects from detoxification.
And you need to go to the colon therapist or get an enema bucket and help get the process.
That too, exactly.
Yeah. I just wanted to add to the, you know, so many people have said to me that I really buy all these supplements, I spend a fortune on them, and then I find I don't take them, because there's something about, you know, swallowing 30 or 50 pills a day that just isn't appealing to us. And so there's so many things on the diet that do supply the nutrients that we need. I'm not saying don't supplement, but I'm definitely saying get them, you know, from food. And so vitamin C, as you mentioned, we have the diet is very rich in vitamin C, particularly in the cultured vegetables. Cabbage is a good source of vitamin C, and you ferment it, and it becomes hundreds of times richer in vitamin C. It also would have the microflora then for making the B vitamins that are so important. So there's just so many different things that we're taking care of, because we're a probiotic diet that other diets have just never addressed before. And I think people really prefer to take ideally would like to get their nutrients from delicious tasting foods.
Well, I agree, but I think it's an individual case, and I think people need to try they certainly can just try diet, and if they feel like they're doing fine with that, that's fine. But I know when we do a lot of testing, we sometimes find, like on the organics urine test, we find all sort of defects in metabolism because people don't have enough B vitamins, certainly don't have enough antioxidants. There are neurotransmitters and amino acids are out of whack, and they get better. They get better than they thought they could get when they do add some of this on. So that's sort of more the medical approach to it. But
I just want people to know that they don't have to stay on supplements forever. They are supplemental, and they can help correct the deficiency. But being on the diet is really critical. And I honestly feel for years and years of, you know, having just a great relationship with food myself, that people still do not understand the power of foods to heal. And I'm not so sure we've really had healing foods up until now, but I think that the information that by putting together the system of healing that we have here, we have more information, new information than people have had before, and we certainly can use foods to heal more than, you know, we have this tool now that we've never had before. So I just want people to know, yes, supplement, there's some great supplements out there, they are expensive, but the supplements aren't going to do the job. The food is a critical tool, particularly a food that's correcting digestion, always nurturing the digestive tract. That's what we always try to do, is nurture the digestive tract as well.
Donna and Leonard, I think what you're saying is really important, because people, especially right now, we have gotten a lot of questions on, you know, how can I do this and also save money. And I think the key here, what both of you just said, is there can be testing done to find out where people are needing to have supplementation. So, Leonard, you mentioned the vitamin D testing. Could you talk about testing people could get if they wanted to see how their vitamin levels were and things like that?
Well, there's many different tests, but probably the one that I tend to prefer, it comes from either Genova Diagnostics, which is GDX.net, or Metametrics.com, which is Metametrix.com. You do have to have a healthcare practitioner order the test for you, but it's called an organics urine test, and they're looking at organic acids, which are acids that are made secondary to all the metabolism that's going on. And when you look at the downstream metabolites, you can actually see, is the fuel you're feeding the body optimum or not? And it's just like a car. You know, if you look at the oil and the exhaust out of a race car, and they do look at that by looking at what's not burnt the right way, they find ways to enrich the fuel so that you get better performance. Well, they look at about 40 different metabolites when they're looking at the urine. And it can actually be, the beauty of this, it can be a first morning urine, so it doesn't have to be a 24-hour collection. And it looks at everything from antioxidants to B vitamin metabolism to neurotransmitters to basic metabolism. It actually looks at all of the substrates in the Krebs cycle. You know, the Krebs cycle is where we actually take the food we eat and reduce part of it down to pyruvate, which goes into the Krebs cycle to make combining with oxygen to make ATP, which is the energy that makes us run. Well, they can look at every one of those downstream metabolites and get a pretty good idea if you've got a shortage of one thing or the other. And it's surprising. A lot of people do that actually feel pretty good. Now, that's fine-tuning, and I'm not saying everybody needs that. Matter of fact, most people, if you just did what Don is recommending in terms of exercise and diet and sleep and elimination and sauna and colon hydrotherapy, things like that, you're fine. But if you're a world-class athlete wanting to do better, or at the other end of the spectrum, if you have got a serious illness and you're really wanting to find out what you can do naturally along with whatever you'd be doing with your traditional doctor, well, then you want to know about your cell metabolism. You want to know about what your B vitamins are doing. You want to know if your neurotransmitters are balanced. You want to know what your antioxidant status is. And that same urine, you can look at detoxification. It gives all sort of molecules in the urine to let you know how you're handling toxins. And finally, it even lets you know if the bacteria in your gut are balanced or not by looking at the bacterial metabolites that actually get in the blood and end up in the urine. So I think that it's a very good test. And for those that, it's not cheap, it's in the neighborhood of $300 or something like that, but to do that once or twice a year for people that really are wanting more information about where they're at and what they need to do. Of course, one of the nice things these companies do is they actually come out with a nutrient supplementation program that they have figured out right to the milligram amounts that you need for the to match the abnormality of the lab test. Now, and again, it's not perfect. There is no perfect way to do this, but I think if you're going to really be serious about detoxification, it would be worth looking at one of those tests.
Well, you said that they're expensive, but I think $300 to get that kind of information is a bargain. Because, again, the principle of uniqueness, which is one of our seven principles, you've got to know what's going on in your body at that moment of time to be able to make wise decisions. So these tests are essential for giving you that information.
Yeah.
To me, that looks like a bargain.
Yeah. And one last thing I'd like to comment on is I think each decade we live, things change. And the older you get, the more you need to be careful about what you're eating and what you're doing to get the result you want, because they have actually shown that osteoporosis or osteopenia, thinning of the bones or loss of bone, and sarcopenia, which is loss of muscle, both of those have to do with chronic low-grade metabolic acidosis, which comes, again, from dehydration and from not eating a balanced diet. You may end up with too much food that isn't being well digested. We didn't even mention digestive enzymes, but I think they become more and more critical the older you get, particularly with cooked food. Uncooked food has its own enzymes in it, but cooked food, you probably would be wise to take we're talking about supplements again. I think good digestive enzyme supplements, the older you get, the less your pancreas and brush border enzymes are going to work for you, and the more you need to take things like enzymes. Another thing I just found the other day is supplementing with amino acids, but not just any amino acids, essential amino acids. We know, and I didn't mention supplements, another really big important thing is the EPA and DHA, which typically come from fish oil. I'm pleased to say there are companies out there now that are beginning to make EPA and DHA from algae so that we won't need to constantly deplete our fish supplies of the world. So the EPA and DHA are omega-3s. They're essential fats, just like omega-6 is an essential fat. And, you know, eating seeds and nuts, and you don't need to eat a lot of them, but a handful a day probably or plenty, but you will get some balance of omega-6 and omega-3, which are both essential fats. But most people, because of using salad dressings and whatnot, end up with way too much 6 relative to 3. The only way to get 3, again, is either through fish oil or now algae oils that have DHA. We've had that for quite a while, but now we're just about coming out with the one for EPA. Or eating flax seeds or chia seeds, both of which are quite high in alpha-linolenic acid, which is actually the essential fat, but it converts down to EPA and DHA. But again, it only converts down if you've got the right amount of minerals and the right balance of enzymes in your body.
I want to add, too, that the nuts and seeds have to be prepared properly, too, because they're not digestible if you just pick up a nut or seed. You have to soak it to remove that enzyme inhibitor as well. So we always stress, you know, look at a food and see, do we have to do something to this food to make it work in the human body? Nuts, seeds, grains, and so on definitely have to be soaked.
Or also, particularly with flax seeds, it's good to put them in a coffee grinder and totally turn it into a powder. But if you do it, you need to eat it right then because you've liberated the omega-3. Chia seeds, on the other hand, can be put in any water-based liquid, whether it's a juice of some sort, vegetable, or some sort of a dilute fruit juice, and they will absorb 15 times their weight in the liquid. So that's a very nice way to get ALA, alpha-linolenic acid, is through chia seeds. That's another source. One other thing I wanted to point out, and particularly for vegetarians and people that are eating more of a plant-based diet, and I sort of alluded to it a little earlier, is essential amino acids. I keep finding more and more articles, and here's one I just found yesterday from the Clinical Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism from May 2009. How is that for recent? And it's out of University of Texas. And they actually took elderly women, were their target group, and they gave them about 7.5 grams of essential amino acids twice a day for 3 months, and showed that they had an increase in their lean body mass. They had improved fractional synthesis of muscle protein, and the one repetition maximal muscle strength was increased, and their IGF-1, which is a marker for growth hormone, was increased. So isn't that interesting? And again, the key word there is essential. So understand, essential amino acids, you don't make them. There's no way your body's going to make them, so you must take them. That being said, most protein-containing foods, particularly meat and eggs, have all of the essential amino acids in it. Vegetable foods, some are low in lysine. A lot of them are low in lysine. Most of them are very high in arginine. But some combination of animal products and grains and legumes, you should get the amino acids you want. But it might well be that in this particular group, maybe they're not digesting or absorbing it all so well, because they actually recommended taking the essential amino acids between meals twice a day, and they showed significant benefits by it. So I'm not proposing that everybody become big super supplementers, but I really do think that depending on each individual and your circumstance, a multiple vitamin, fish oil, vitamin D, certainly probiotics, and possibly even essential amino acids taken as a supplement from time to time could be beneficial. But again, I'm not sure that you couldn't do fine if you really could, if we would stick really to the program that we outlined earlier. But that's not always.
Well, you know, I want to add too that quinoa has all the essential amino acids, and it's so for people that don't want to get all their amino acids from animal proteins, quinoa is great. We are also about to bring out a phenomenal protein powder for just this purpose, because I've realized how protein malnourished people are. And I do think we need to be supplementing, digesting the protein we do eat, supplementing with other forms of protein, something like our Vitality Super Green with the fermented cereal grasses and algae. And, you know, these types of things are other sources of vegetarian protein. So I don't think we can get all of our protein from animal sources, and I know you agree with that. Again, to make a plug for our new book, we have a great chapter on protein. It was one of the most difficult chapters for us to write, because talking about protein is like, you know, talking about religion or politics. Like, you shouldn't even discuss them with people because they're so emotional about the vegetarians believe absolutely you have to be a vegetarian. Everybody should be a vegetarian. And the meat eaters who can't be vegetarians don't feel good unless they eat some animal protein, feel guilty, and they're very adamant about their high-protein diet. But, you know, I think we have a great answer in this chapter. We really go over all this and come up with a super solution. But protein powders like this are wonderful, and we do have those available. And we're about to bring out a great fermented protein powder ourselves that I developed specifically because people need more protein.
I agree, and I think it's not just the protein, it's what it comes from. So you're hitting it right on the head, and I think that's the next huge step in human nutrition, is to get more high-quality plant protein and possibly find ways to ferment it to even further make it easier, because again, if we're talking about the baby boomers going into their senior years, it's so obvious that seniors just are not digesting their food, and they're probably not even getting the right sources of protein.
I used to think it was one of those things that, and of course all the literature says as we get older we don't digest, but you know, from all the autistic children that we work with, they don't digest their food either, and I don't think anybody's digesting food well anymore. They lack the center ecosystem, and they and maybe they don't need, a child doesn't necessarily need to take supplemental enzymes, but it doesn't hurt. We just open them up and sprinkle them on the child's food. It looks to me, from where I sit, it looks like every age group benefits from digesting their food better and needs enzymes or pre-digested foods, which
right.
is what we have so much of on the diet.
Well, Donna and Leonard, we have covered so much incredible information today, and I thought what we might do to wrap it up is so many of the things we covered have to do with the fact that our lifestyles in these days are so busy and so full of stress, and that all is going to end up affecting the thyroid and adrenals. Can we talk a little bit about the importance of energy and the thyroid adrenals to wrap up today's class?
Sure. Well, they go together, and they need to be considered like the left and the right hand. And there's lots of ways to look at it. One of the simple things, people can go online and look up Wilson syndrome, because there's a large group of people that have what is considered low thyroid, but don't have any tests. The standard tests don't show it. But basically what happens is that, you know, your thyroid gland makes thyroid hormone. It takes tyrosine, which is an amino acid that can come from anything from meat to fish to eggs to nuts and grains. But it will take tyrosine into the thyroid gland. Then it takes iodine from our diet into the thyroid gland, and it puts the iodine on the tyrosine. So a lot of people aren't aware of this, but all in the world T3 is one tyrosine amino acid with three iodines hanging off of it. And T4 is four iodines. So all that's happening in the thyroid is it's taking in the iodine and the tyrosine and hooking them together. That being said, the thyroid is susceptible to having a lot of toxins get in it that can affect that in a lot of different ways. But let's say you are making your thyroid hormone okay. So then out of the thyroid gland into the blood goes the T4, which is triiodothyronine, and the T4, which is tetraiodothyronine. So T3, T4 go throughout the body, go into all the cells of the body. Now, the other thing we measure and look at from a testing perspective is something called thyroid-stimulating hormone that's actually released from the pituitary. Now, if your thyroid isn't making enough T3 and T4, your TSH, or thyroid-stimulating hormone, will go up high, which means it's trying to whip the thyroid, sending the message more and more and more. But what we'll find is that some people will have a low body temperature, low energy, and their TSH will be normal, and their T3 and their T4 will be normal. So that's where most doctors would say, well, you don't really have a thyroid problem, it's all in your head. Well, I think there's enough data out there, and it's even in Harrison's textbook of internal medicine, that there's a condition called peripheral underconversion hypothyroidism. Now, that's a mouthful, and I'll explain it very quickly. Again, T4 and T3, when they leave the thyroid, they go to almost every cell of the body, and they go in the cell. So outside of the thyroid, everything outside of the thyroid is peripheral to the thyroid, right? So we're talking about a leg muscle or a pancreas cell. It's got its thyroid hormone in there. Well, if T4 doesn't convert to T3, it's being underconverted. T3 is the most active of the two. T3 actually swims into the nucleus of the cell and upregulates for the production of mitochondrial protein so that you will make more mitochondria, so you'll make more energy. So if T4 doesn't convert to T3, you won't have enough T3 to cause the cells to continually make up and regenerate their mitochondria, so you have a brownout of energy. You feel it because you feel tired, and people walk around with a basal temperature of 96, you know, and it should be closer to 90. T4-8 or 98.6. So what causes T4 not to go to T3? You want to know one of the biggest ones is cortisol. Too much cortisol from too much stress. So just think about how stressed out people are, how high their cortisol levels are. So cortisol will block T4 from going to T3. So one way to heal the thyroid is to chill out and get out of your stressful lifestyle. Another big thing, though, is selenium. The mineral selenium is critical for making T4 go to T3. And if you don't have enough selenium, it won't do it either. There's an enzyme called deiodinase enzyme, because it's all it's doing is taking an iodine off of T4 to make it T3, so it's a deiodinase enzyme. That enzyme will not work with too low of selenium. I've also heard too low of zinc, as well as too high of cortisol. Well, again, we're back to the heavy metal issue where we started with the mercury. Mercury will literally cause the total body zinc and selenium level to be significantly lowered. So I think that people that have chronic low thyroids should probably be checked for lead and cadmium and mercury, because that could be one of the reasons their selenium and zinc are low. But those are two minerals that a lot of people could stand to supplement with. And particularly people that are on more of a vegetarian diet, zinc can be very low. And so I think, and it's partly because the zinc is, unless it's zinc monomethionine, it's not well absorbed, and particularly on the high fiber diet. But that being said, I wouldn't stop eating the vegetables. I would supplement with zinc. Or again, if you chose to see a holistic practitioner, they could do a red blood cell zinc and selenium levels and let you know whether your tissue levels of zinc are adequate or not. But that's just one form of low thyroid. Another thing that happens to thyroid, and you're going to see the same thing happening to the adrenal, is these auto, that we've already mentioned it in the pancreas, is if you've got leaky gut and an increased intestinal permeability and you upregulate your gut-associated lymphoid tissue called GALT, we didn't mention that earlier, but something like 70 to 80% of your entire immune system sits right there next to your intestinal lining, monitoring for these tons of food that come in over the decades that we're alive. So if your immune system of your gut gets upregulated, again, through antigen mimicry, it could actually make antibodies to your thyroid. So anybody with a thyroid problem should be looking at what are called thyroid autoantibodies, thyroglobulin antibody, and TPO, thyroid peroxidase antibodies. Because if you've got these autoantibodies in your blood, that's why people get thyroiditis, whether it's Hashimoto's or somebody else's name. Autoimmune thyroiditis is way more common than we thought it was, because so many people's intestinal tract is so messed up. That, along with the stress causing the inability to convert the enzyme. So those are a couple of major issues for the thyroid. And it's very similar for the adrenal. The adrenal can get worn out, because if we stay stressed out, if you think about it, the adrenal medulla literally makes epinephrine and norepinephrine, which are very important molecules to give us energy and joy in life and everything else, but they're also the ones that push us and get us to drive harder and harder to get things done. And when, whether it's under the stress of exercise or the stress of working and being late with a project, we tend to put out too much epinephrine and norepinephrine, and that's the beginning of the stress response. And then the adrenals from the cortex, the outside of the adrenal, then releases cortisol in order to kind of cool and slow things down. So it's a dynamic balance between epinephrine, norepinephrine, and cortisol all the time. But as you keep overdriving, you basically can wear the adrenal gland down to the point that it just won't make the cortisol, and then you've got to actually go back and supplement with a like low dose prednisone, 2.5 milligrams or 5 milligrams. And people that are stressed out are either stressed out on the upper cycle, which means they've got way too much cortisol, or they're on the downswing. They've already worn their adrenals down, and now they need to supplement with prednisone. And some people, I've actually tried it with some people just to give them a small dose, and people actually feel way better for a while, but that's not the long-term answer. The answer is to rebuild the adrenals through the right diet and the right supplements. And actually the diet...
Yeah, I was going to throw in a little tip here, too.
Yeah, go ahead.
You had mentioned tyrosine. It's such an important amino acid and for the thyroid, but it's also the amino acid that's necessary for producing norepinephrine in the adrenals. And I find many, many people feel so much better when they take a product like our ocean plant extract, which is for the thyroid, with tyrosine. And then, again, the tyrosine is good for the adrenals. But we get into this habit, really, of being so stressed out for so long that you just can't break it. And
right.
So something like the GABA and the 5-HTP, either, you know, you have to find your individual amount on that, but maybe taking one tablet of 500 milligrams of 5-HTP at bedtime and 750 milligrams or so at bedtime of the GABA can help the adrenals relax and sort of reset them so that they're not constantly just sort of stuck in this fight or flight mode. And so I've been having good success with people with that lately. You know, you can say to people, stop being stressed out and chill out. You know, like me, for example, it takes me 4 or 5 days if I'm on a vacation to kind of unwind because I'm so busy all the time. But so little things like little supplements, here we are back to supplements being valuable, like this can be really, really valuable for helping you get out of that habit, really, that you're in, that
right.
to break this bad habit.
Yeah.
So.
Well, thank you for reminding me because I meant to go beyond the tyrosine and that, and this, again, connects literally between the thyroid and the adrenal, but what's really happening in the adrenal is the phenylalanine gets converted to tyrosine, and then the tyrosine actually gets converted to dopamine, and then dopamine gets converted to norepinephrine, and then that gets converted to epinephrine. But, you know, here we go with the supplements again. Guess what? To go from phenylalanine to tyrosine, you definitely need B6, B3, B12, vitamin C, folate, all those B vitamins, and iron. Now, look at the number of women that end up being iron deficient because they're vegetarian and they're runners and they are menstruating every month, and then they get totally worn out. And part of the reason is I think you could actually look at some of those people. You can. This is another thing that the organics urine test looks at. It looks at the downstream metabolites. And if your phenylalanine level is low, although most people get enough in their diet, but some people don't, and if you don't, then you need a supplement with it. But there's something called homovanillate, which is the metabolite of phenylalanine. If it's low in the urine, it means you're just not getting enough of it in your diet for whatever the reason. And then you can look at the other end of it, the norepinephrine and epinephrine. If vanylmandylate, VMA for short, is low, it means you're norepinephrine and epinephrine is low. And that happens. Some people get so burned out, they have no energy. But here's another good one. You need vitamin C and copper to convert dopamine to norepinephrine. And then you need acetyl methionine, SAMe, to convert norepinephrine to epinephrine. So all along the path, it's amazing. The more I look at the biochemistry, it's amazing we do as well as we do. And being a little off is not that big of a deal. And if you get the test and you're a little bit off, they'll basically recommend only increasing this a little or that a little. But some people actually get way off, and these are the people that really need, I think, to do testing to figure out where they're at with that. Because, you know, you can really rebuild both your thyroid and your adrenals through the right nutrition, stress reduction, certainly with the essential fats, the essential amino acids, and everything back in balance. You can rebuild it. That's the beautiful part about this. It's not like you're done forever.
Excellent. Well, that is so helpful to know. Thank you, Leonard. And I want to thank you, and I also want to thank you, Donna.